UK Wine Show, show number 41, Joel Peterson and Zinfandel. G'day, welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 41 for the 9th of March 2007. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we're going to be continuing our conversation with Joel Peterson, the King of Zin. Joel's going to be talking to us about his beloved Zinfandel. I must admit, I've always thought of Zinfandel coming from Italy's Primitivo grape as being its genetic home. But Joel has other ideas, and we're going to find out about Zinfandel, how it got to the US, and some of the problems with growing it, as well as the new selective breeding program that Joel's been involved in to try and improve the quality of Zinfandel and get a more even ripening of the grape. I ran the first part of our four-part wine course in London on Tuesday, and it went down very well. The rest of the slots are pretty much filled up, except for the tasting on the 20th of March, which is the New Zealand versus English tasting. Being a Kiwi living in England, New Zealand and England wines are my two favourite regions, so it'll be pretty interesting to see how people respond to it with those two regions going head-to-head. Both are cool climate islands, and so we'll just see how that goes. If you're after any tickets, you can go to our website, www.3050.co.uk, and click on What's New. You'll see the links for all the courses there. But next is the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks very much, Chris. Australian scientists have pinpointed the genetic difference between red and white grapes, a discovery that could lead to the production of new grape varieties. It has long been known that the ancestors of modern grapes were all red, but no one knew how it came about. Now, however, a team from the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organisation, the CSIRO, has found that a rare genetic occurrence thousands of years ago gave us white grapes. The team studied part of a red grapevine chromosome carrying the genes for red colour and compared it to a white variety chromosome. Dr. Mandy Walker from CSIRO said, "Our research showed that extremely rare and independent mutations in two genes produced a single white grapevine. This grapevine was the parent of almost all the world's white grape varieties. If only one gene had been mutated, most grapes would still be red and we would not have more than 3,000 white cultivars available today." The discovery also has great potential for producing interesting and exciting new varieties with novel colours through genetic modification in the future. Meanwhile, strong sales of champagne and a growth in the consumption of mid-range and premium wines helped French wine and spirits exports reach record levels in 2006. Overall, exports were up 12.9% by value last year at €8.74 billion, according to figures announced by FEVZ, France's Export Federation for Wine and Spirits. However, champagne alone was responsible for nearly a quarter of this, representing a 14.7% increase in export sales and returning bubbly to its 1999 record. Wine exports continued their recovery, with sales up nearly 10% to €3.9 billion and volumes up more than 5% to 143 million cases. This rise is mainly put down to premiumisation, according to the FEVZ president. Regionally, Bordeaux saw excellent growth, up to 23% by value, as did the Côte d'Aronne, which was up 17.4%. Only in Languedoc-Roussillon and Beaujolais were sales down. The UK was the top importer of French wines by value, but the growth rate is faster in the US, which is already the number one consumer once you take spirits into account. However, exports to China showed the biggest increase in value, up nearly 45% on 2005 sales. The record rise for wine exports comes as good news for the French, who have been facing a tough time in recent years. Not only have they seen a drop in domestic consumption, but they have also had to deal with chronic overproduction as well as stiff competition from the New World. And finally, a wine estate in New Zealand's Wairarapa region has been hit by the vineyard blight Phylloxera. The discovery was made at the Matahiwi estate in the Masterton area in the North Island. Unlike the vast majority of New Zealand, Matahiwi has 25 hectares of vines that haven't been grafted onto Phylloxera-resistant rootstocks. Matahiwi Estate General Manager Jane Cooper said she was unsure how the vineyard came to be infected, but suspected it was either from plant material or from soil traces brought in on vehicles from affected regions. Phylloxera is also present in Marlborough, Hawke's Bay, Gisborne, Nelson and central Otago, although 92% of vines in New Zealand are on phylloxera-resistant rootstocks. The spread of the problem can be contained by developing and sticking to a strict protocol governing such things as the movement of machinery, vehicles and plant material from vineyard to vineyard. Matahiwi Estate has put its protocol in place, however about a quarter of Wairarapa's vines are on ungrafted rootstocks, so are under threat of infection if the bug spreads throughout the region. Warren Adamson, UK Director of New Zealand Wine Growers, says the only way forward is a replanting programme. That's it for the news this week. Back to you, Chris.
Thanks for that, Jane. It's good to see that the French wine industry is starting to recover. They've had certainly some problems over the years, particularly with dropping off in domestic consumption. But I'm a bit concerned about how much they've actually changed their industry. It feels to me more like a coat of paint, you know, a few new zones here, a couple of VDPs throughout the region. Doesn't look like any structural change, which I think is what it really, really needs. So we'll wait and see if the changes that they've carried out so far are enough to give it the long-term health that everybody in the wine trade hopes for. Next up is the interview with Joel Peterson on Zinfandel. Joel is the king of Zin, but doesn't produce any rosés or white Zins. And his claim to fame at the winery is, we make no wimpy wines here. So let's have a listen to Joel. Hi, I'm here with Joel Peterson from Ravenswood Wines. Ravenswood Wines are, the biggest producer of Zinfandel in the US. I understand you're doing some work at the moment to track down the history of Zinfandel and clones, etc. Where did Zinfandel originally start? Most people call it, you know, the Primitivo grape from Italy.
Well, we actually have done a lot of genetic research. A woman named Carol Meredith really figured out how to analyze grapes to determine where they came from. For instance, she determined that Cabernet Sauvignon was a cross between Sauvignon Blanc and Cabernet Franc, a red grape and a white grape. Mm-hmm. And she used this data to look back at Zinfandel and its various antecedents. And it turns out Primitivo is genetically the same as Zinfandel, but it's a very different clonal variation. And she looked at grapes in Croatia, and people thought that this grape might be Plavac Mali. It turns out Plavac Mali is a son of Zinfandel, and with some searching, she found a grape called Zerlianats Castellanski, which is genetically identical to Zinfandel and to Primitivo. It looks slightly different than Primitivo in that it's much more uneven ripening, which is very much like Zinfandel is. And based on the data that she's been able to collect and the kinds of variations that are in Croatia, we believe that this grape came to Croatia. Would it be surprising if it went across the Adriatic to Italy, which is, you know, Puglia is really right across the Adriatic from there. We believe it went there sometime in the 1700s, early 1800s. Came to California via a collection in Austria, which was from the Austro-Hungarian Schönbrunn collection. And it turned out that Croatia was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, so it would be one of the grapes that was collected. So it makes sense based on everything we can determine genetically that the grape is from Croatia. California's version is probably from Croatia, as is Italy's. They've been separated for a long time. They've been selected for different things. So they look slightly different at this particular juncture, but they are basically clonal variations of the same grape.
Okay. How many clonal variations do you think there are of Zinfandel?
There are probably a number. I'm working on a big project with UC Davis where we have something called the Zinfandel Heritage Vineyard, where we have collected a number of selections of vines that were planted before 1920 in California. We currently have 90 selections. We have narrowed it down to 20 that are really interesting variations on that grape. They've been planted. We are looking and measuring everything we can measure about these grapes, and we're also making wine out of them. It's very early in the process yet. It's a good 10-year project. It's one of those long-term projects where I'll be old and gray and long and toothed before it's done, if I'm lucky. And it looks to me like there are at least three distinct variations based on very early data. But we'll see. I mean, it's an interesting project. It's really fascinating, and it will give us the clonal knowledge we need to plant better Zinfandel in the future, or at least match clonal variation with site in a way that's the most constructive.
Zinfandel, California's grape. They're trying to pass a law recently to make it California's grape.
They're going to make California's historical grape. And there's no doubt that it's been tied up in the history of California viticulture for a long time. It arrived in California in 1854 and very rapidly became the most rapidly, widely planted grape in California. And by 1880, there were 30,000 acres of it. To give you an idea, there are about 50,000 acres of it planted now. So it was a very, very important grape in California. And it became important because it fits with the environment. If Cabernet is Bordeaux's grape and Pinot Noir is Burgundy's grape and Shiraz maybe is Australia's grape, although it might be claimed by the Rhone as well, Zinfandel is clearly California's grape. It is the right grape in the right environment. California has a environment where the rains stop in June, the humidity stays low all summer, and the rains don't stop well into September, which is exactly what this grape needs. It didn't survive in Croatia because it was too humid, and there were lots of other regions where it didn't grow very well. But the balance of where it grows and the kinds of expression that it gets and the kinds of wine it produces are perfect for California. So it is clearly California's grape, whether it be historical or not. It's the right grape for the right environment.
So what sort of problems do you have with Zinfandel growing it?
Well, it has the uneven ripeness, which is the issue of if you're not very careful about how you pick it, you get wines that are extremely high in alcohol, which is exactly what happens, and sometimes with residual sugar in it. If you pick it too early, you end up getting inconsequential wines that taste sort of like picnic-style, lightweight Beaujolais. Yeah. If you're not careful, when it's a young vine, it will produce huge numbers of grapes. It'll produce 8 or 9 tons an acre, which is why it's really good for making white Zinfandel, because you can make this really cheap plonk with high volumes. But it is also the strength of the grape in the sense that when it gets very old, it still is productive, meaning it'll produce about 3 tons an acre or less, which is exactly what you need for producing good, balanced red wine out of it. And it has a propensity to rot easily in a high humidity environment or when there's rain. Fortunately, in California, that doesn't happen very often.
Do you have much disease pressure from plants or even diseased vines themselves? Because if the vine's been in the ground for 100 years, they must have picked up something.
It's remarkable. Leaf roll virus didn't get introduced into California until the 1920s, so those vines that were planted earlier are still quite clean. The vines themselves have held up very well. We've been through several scourges of one variety or another in California, and the first vines in California were planted in the 1850s. They had to be replanted in the 1880s because of phylloxera, but mm-hmm. those replantings are the ones that we're now getting grapes from.
How come they weren't pulled out during Prohibition? I thought a lot of vines were pulled.
Well, Prohibition was really remarkable for Zinfandel. In fact, there was a little bit more Zinfandel planted during Prohibition because it became the favorite grape of home winemakers. A lot of home winemakers were making wine. In fact, 3 years after Prohibition, there was still more home wine being made than was being made commercially in the entire state of California. But one of the favorite grapes was Zinfandel. And there was a lot of Zinfandel that did get pulled out, but Zinfandel was in flatlands where things like fruit trees grew better or row crops. But the Zinfandel that was really good remained, and that's one of the things that makes Zinfandel so good in California today, because it was highly selective, dry-farmed vines in the right soils that balanced with the grapevine. And home winemakers knew this, and so they grew grapes for them, and as a consequence, Zinfandel survived the Prohibition.
The old vines, you're talking about 100-year-old vines earlier. Are they bush vines, or are they on trellising now, or what's the story there?
No, most of the vines that are being grown that are old vines are all bush vines, or head-pruned, or gobelet. It's a really old-style French pruning system.
Yeah.
And it's actually perfect for Zinfandel, because Zinfandel is a slightly larger clustered variety. And if you grow it on trellising, the clusters tend to hang on top of one another, so they don't get the right light. They also tend to rot more easily.
Okay.
So bush vining, was the right way to do it. You can also control crop levels better that way.
I presume all the new plantings are going onto trellising, though.
No. In fact, a lot of the new plantings that are going in that are Zinfandel are being put on bush vines for the very reason that it's a more appropriate trellising system for this particular grape.
You can't mechanically harvest a bush vine, though, can you?
If you bring it up high enough, and you don't turn it into a tiny bush vine like some of them were in the old days, you can mechanically harvest. But it's not the perfect form for mechanical harvesting, no. So everything that we do is hand harvested, which I think is a better harvesting system in any case, as long as we have labor.
The perception of the Sideways movie is that it drove Pinot Noir sales. Did that influence the Zinfandel sales? You don't make any Pinot Noir, do you?
I don't make Pinot Noir.
Is that because it's a wimpy wine?
That's because it's a wimpy wine. it's also because when I was learning to make wine from my mentor, Joe Swan, he made Pinot Noir and Chardonnay and Zinfandel. And Zinfandel, ironically, was his most successful grape, although he desperately wanted to be successful with Pinot Noir. And one night as we were sitting there drinking late, he said, you're young. He says, you have choices to make. He says, I suggest that if you make the right choices, you will not make Pinot Noir. And, while I took that to heart, it was a bit of a driving factor. It wasn't the sole factor. I just happened to love Zinfandel so much, and it was so much the right grape for me that I ended up there. But I do have a son who's 25 who started making Pinot Noir when he was 5. And when I asked him why he wanted to make Pinot Noir, he said, because you said you'd never make it. So, see, I left the field open for somebody else.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's quite nice. That way his Pinot Noir will never be matched against your Zinfandel, hopefully. What about technological changes? There's a lot of new technology that's been coming into the winemaking in the last 10 years or so, things like reverse osmosis machines that can be used to suck out various elements of the wine. Are you an advocate of that, and or have you used that sort of technology?
Well, I'm not an advocate of it per se. I mean, that sort of technology is a tool, and occasionally, like medicine, you need medicine to take care of disease or illness. And I would say things like stuck fermentations or high VA or
volatile acids,
volatile acidity, vinegar, basically. Are issues with winemaking in some years, and so tools like that can help solve those problems. But when tools like that are used all the time, they make commodity wine, standard wine. They don't make wine that is really very interesting, wine that is interesting for people who really love to understand what soils and years and the winemaker's art is about. It would be the equivalent of a doctor saying, oh, well, this human being's born now. He's likely to get a disease sometime. Let's treat him with antibiotics his entire life. It's just so he won't get anything. Yeah. Well, the truth of the matter is that that's not good medicine. And using the machines like this on a regular basis, for anything except issues that are associated with problems, is bad medicine. I mean, it's bad winemaking at the end of the day.
And you think these sort of technologies, such as reverse osmosis to strip out alcohol and volatile acids, you think that's being maybe used a wee bit too much?
Well, I think it has a propensity to go in that direction, and people are using it more and more, and you're seeing more commonality between wines. I mean, everybody's shooting for what they consider perfection. So there's a certain alcohol level that's considered perfection. There's a certain sweetness level that's considered perfection. There's a certain color level that's considered perfection. Well, if those things are considered perfection, then all wines will be headed for, that mythical perception of perfection, and it'll be completely boring. I mean, you don't want Chablis that tastes like, Montrachet that tastes, like Muscadet, for God's sakes. I mean, and in fact, there's more compression in that kind of way, where this mythical ideal, driven by maybe one or two wine writers, is what people shoot for. And while it may be commercially successful, it's incredibly boring.
Yep, for drinkers as well as makers, perhaps. All right, I think we'll wrap it up there, Joel.
Great.
Thank you very much for your time.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for the interview.
Cheers very much.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with Joel. Zinfandel is a great grape, and you can find some of Joel's wines in the supermarkets. They're under the branding Ravenswood. Next week, we're talking with wine personality and sommelier Matt Skinner. Matt is the sommelier at Jamie Oliver's 15 restaurant, and he burst onto the scene about 3 years ago. He's got a couple of books to his name, and interestingly enough, he's an Aussie. So until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show was brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show was produced by Jane Scott and recorded and edited by Chris Scott. The news was read by Jane Scott and researched by Sandra Clement. The music for the UK Wine Show is Griff de Jingle 1 by Marcel de la Jartelle and Silence by Etoile Noire.